Coming up on the podcast, Wah returned to the HJ in front of fans as cheers turned to boos. As we question, did Watson give Price another elementary lesson in coaching? Sam takes a look at second rowers, and not to be second best, Dennis returns with fails and the unexpected. There'll be rumours as we receive word from Chris Sando. A mutiny on the HJ drops anchor in Huddersfield with Caribbean flair. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, welcome, welcome, welcome to What Would Brian Bevan Say? I'm Rob London, here to keep a lid on this podcasting chaos. So talking of which, where are my two chaotic co-hosts? Firstly, forget the chaos as he brings calm to the show. Yes, pausing so long between his statistical facts, it's enough to send anyone to sleep. Introducing Sam Stagnated Sankey!
Evening.
If you have gone to sleep, no, you're not dreaming. A man bringing REM to many a listener, it's Dennis Nightmare Waywell.
You all right?
I'm very well, Dennis. Although I've got a bit of a cold. It's going to be a bit different tonight because the missus has got to go into work because the Australians are obsessed with Eurovision. And she's running Eurovision. So she's been running around the house this morning, panicking. She's got to go into the office. So I'm here with young James. He's over on the couch doing his Latin. So he should be all right for an hour. But you all right, James? Yeah, it's deep in thought.
I've just got visions of him being strapped to a chair with something stuffed in his mouth. Sorry, carry on.
Like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Before we start, we should probably move on to the most important thing of this entire podcast, and that was on the morning of the game, Sam sent a video of his dog on his normal walk going round to Greg Inglis's house to have a wee on his lawn. But, Sammy, it didn't turn out that way.
He didn't, no. He didn't have his normal piss. He sniffed in the normal spot, and then he walked away. He walked across the other side of the path and had a wee in a different place. It was obviously... It was an omen.
They do say that dogs can smell injuries and things, don't they? So maybe that was a sign.
I mean, you sent the video footage through, Sam, and he sort of took a couple of sniffs at Inglis's lawn and was like, I'm having none of this morning, and quickly crossed the road to piss on the other side. So
I think we should just make it clear, it's not actually Greg's lawn, it's the piece of grass outside his house.
Oh, dear. Well, this week maybe you should just get him to go up the driveway and have a shit or something until he's back. Probably the best thing. Right, let's move on to the game. The Wire team was, and I'll read it out in terms of the way that people actually lined up in their positions. Inglis, Thulis, Ratchford at centre, Mamo, Charnley, Flaky Bake at six, Widdop, Hill, Clark, Cooper, Curry and King. Interchange bench was Philbin, Davis, Mulhern and Akawala. Have I left one off there, boys?
You've left one off. Jason Clark.
Jason Clark. Was it loose forward? Lock. Number 13. Final score was Warrington 20, Huddersfield 26.
Gaskell's pass, and away goes Ricky Lutelli, and Lutelli gets the pass away to Darnell McIntosh. Oh, just short of the line, short of the line, but the ball comes out, and James Child awards the try to the alert Lee Gaskell. Crowded room, you look so happy. Caesar, Cogger, oh, Gaskell will get another try. Gaskell sells an outrageous dummy, wrong-footing Warrington's defence. I don't know why I run away. Trout plays the ball, Caesar's pass out wide, McGilvray slips and dumps the ball down. Oh, what a try that is from the Giants. You could have asked me why I broke your heart. Now Widdop goes wide to Ratchford. Ratchford short pass. Inglis can't get the ball down. Can he? Or can he? He's rolled over. He's got it down. Like you didn't care. I don't know why. And Blake Austin. An influence on this game for Steve Price's side in the second half. His kick setting up the opportunity. Another Warrington try. Straight off the penalty.
Gonna take me back, cause I want to stay.
Coming up to the hour mark, and Austin running it at them. Gets the ball to Ratchford, number one, and it's young Josh Dulis who gets the try in the corner.
Your tears for another day.
Here is Caesar. Caesar always a threat. Kenny Edwards likewise. Edwards might go all the way. Has he got that down? He has. And the Giants respond.
Right, boys, now how are we going to do this? Are we going to sort of talk through each try? Is that the best way to do it, Sam? Or are we going to sort of summarise every 20 minutes? Did it have a theme and a narrative as this game went on? What do you think, mate?
Personally, I think 20-minute spells is probably a good idea. As in, the first 20 minutes, we were awful and not at the races.
Dennis, have you got any points? Because every week I come to you, mate, it's a case of, I've not got anything on this. Are you warmed up and fresh, ready to go today, mate? Sorry, just a second, my partner's going to work. Bye, darling. Love you. Bye. See you later. Love you. Everything's in order, don't worry. Everything will be fine. Love you. Give my love to Eurovision. Fucking Australia doing Eurovision. They're not even in bloody Europe. Sorry, Dennis, carry on.
Sorry, I'm totally distracted. I wondered why she was sticking two fingers up at you. But anyway, I was in the bath watching the first half.
I was in the bath in the second half watching the game. So we covered the whole bath nautically over the 80 minutes, Dennis. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So actually, when I got in the bath, it was full of bubbles of excitement for the bath.
Ooh,
at the beginning of the match.
What's your go-to for a bubble? What brand do you go for?
Imperial Leather. This one.
Do they do a bubble bath?
They do bubble baths.
I had a Radox. I did Radox.
You'd be always complaining that you're ill. I think when I think about it, I thought, you know what, this is going to be a nice, easy game to watch, relaxing in the bath, no stress, it's Huddersfield, etc. So I thought, scene set, away we go.
Had you not seen Sam's dog earlier in the morning? Had you not seen that video? 100% record, that dog.
Yeah.
Okay, 4th minute, Lee Gaskell scores following a good breakdown, Wires left edge. A slightly debatable bobbling ball on the final pass, but it's given. Caesar converts out wide, and it's the perfect start for the Giants at 0-6. I thought a little bit of credit had to be given to young Foulis on this, Sam. He didn't half try and get that lad into touch. I mean, he really got hold of him. A lot of determination there, but unfortunately, that pass kind of came out sideways, and as rugby balls can do, they can bounce forward. That one didn't seem to. It was pretty flat.
Yeah, I looked at it several times, and I think it was probably fair. But in terms of Thewlis, I thought you're right. His scrambling defence to actually bring him down before the line was brilliant. Can't argue with that. I thought we were undone by Gaskell, not for the first time in the night. And in that first period, Luatelli had Mamba One toast, didn't he? He started ripping holes in us.
Funny you should say that, because I didn't get that impression yet. I spoke to my dad yesterday and he said exactly the same as you, Sam. He seemed to think whether it looks sort of more formidable live.
He was there, was he, yeah?
Yeah, his comment was that, and he was right in the corner near the try line, so I guess he got a good view of them. But he thought that we just looked very small on that side in comparison to their two that were out on their left edge. Didn't come across as much on the TV.
We had King out of position at right second row. Austin, who overall had a much better game, but
he did, yeah.
he's still a bit weak in defence. Mamo, who is full of effort, but not the biggest. And then, of course, Thewlis, who's about the same size as one of Greg Inglis's legs.
Dennis, what did you think of that first try, mate? You got anything on it at all? You got your head delved there down into your notes?
Yeah, I was just looking. Thewlis grabbed his coattails, and it was because it was McIntosh. So there's my contribution to the first
that's
try.
Very good, Dennis. You can have a point for that. Very good. 11th minute, and the Giants show what they can do down their left edge. They can do down their right side too, with Wire getting their defensive numbers wrong for Gaskell to score again. Caesar nails another kick, and it's 0-12. We've talked about this on the podcast quite a few times, Sam, about drawing your man and then passing it along the line. And this was just the case of we were outnumbered. They just drew their men. Charnley was sort of left with two guys to defend against, and it was a simple, easy try for Gaskell.
We were outnumbered, but I thought this is where we had two bits of bad luck. We weren't playing well, but the ball was clearly knocked out of Ben Curry's hand, so it should have been surely a knock-on. And then more of a weak call, but I've seen them given in the NRL regularly. Ratchford was blocked off by some what I would consider good dummy runs, but I've seen them over the weekend in Magic in the NRL knocked off because of contact on a defensive player. So a well-worked try, but I felt we were a bit unlucky over that 2 or 3 minute period.
Can I just clarify what TV you've got, Rob?
What TV I've got? I've got, what did I watch it on? Well, I was in the bath, so I was watching it on my all-weather Radox 17-inch.
Right. And what about you, Sam? What sort of technology were you watching it on?
Live initially with my eyes, and then subsequently on my big, silly flat-screen thing in the corner of the room.
We should have to... It's a bit of a funny week this week. You should probably mention this week. There's a couple of birthdays this week. My partner, my sixth wife, turns the ripe old age of 27 on Thursday. I'm turning, Christ, 40 on bloody Saturday. But Alan London turned 99 on Wednesday.
Again.
And he was at the game, and he sat in the corner. He wasn't in his normal seat, so he's a bit pissed off with that. Oh, but he did say they parked on Wick's car park. They got there at about 2 o'clock. Excuse me, full of a cold today. Got there about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so he was quite anxious because apparently there's cameras on Wicks and it's only 3 hour parking. But my brother was having none of it. They walked to the ground. They said, you know, no one coughed in their face on the way to the ground. He said there was quite a few people outside the pub. They gave that a wide berth. But when they got to the ground and they got the way to their seats, they were put in the corner near the try line, not in their usual seats. So he says he's not going again. He said it's better on the telly. So.
I'm in that corner.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm further up. I'm similar row to normal.
Any sign of Stuart Pearce there?
No sign on that on this occasion, no.
I was listening to a podcast this week with, is it Suggs from Madness?
Madness, yeah.
And he was saying that he had a fancy dress party and Stuart Pearce turned up dressed as a Nazi.
Oh, good job. Maybe we should get your dog to go and shit on the patio so when we know when Stuart Pearce is turning up.
35th minute, simple pass from right to left sees McGilvery have too much time and evades a desperate Charlie to score in the corner. No problem again for Cesar, and it's 18-0 to Huddersfield. I'm going to bring up my first point about this one, and Dennis and I spoke about this, I think, the other day on WhatsApp, and that was Inglis was sort of involved in the tackle prior to this try. He had lots of time to get back up and get in the defensive line, which most of Warrington did, or virtually all of the team did. Inglis was still trotting back. He was still about 8 metres back when McGilvery went over in the corner.
Yeah.
Doesn't look fit, Dennis. Just doesn't look fit.
No, there was a few occasions actually looking back at all those tries, and also just in general play, the fullback, as we all know, you've got to really run round and cover all like the different areas of the pitch when you're in, you know, especially in defence. You know, he's just coming back. It's probably the worst place you could probably put him because you know, you out in the centres, you know, you're going to be able to sort of like pace yourself for 80 minutes, but at fullback, you're too busy. And yeah, he was on the 10-metre line by the time we scored that try, didn't he?
Couldn't catch his breath. Are we saying then, I mean, Inglis scored 18 tries for Queensland in State of Origin. Are we saying if Lee Gaskell had been in that same scenario, he'd be up into the figures of 20 or 25 tries, Dennis, do you think, based on what we saw?
I don't know. How old's Lee Gaskell?
He's like 48, isn't he?
Oh, well, probably no chance.
Sam, you were there, so you must have kept a keen eye on him. What did you make of him sort of off the ball, Inglis? Not so much when we had him on the TV cameras, but was he running around, you know, out of sight?
No, but I couldn't believe how deep he was standing. I couldn't believe that Huddersfield didn't try a little chip over.
Have you been talking to my dad? Because that's exactly what my dad said.
Well, there you go. We both obviously saw the same game from the same angle, didn't we?
Did you park on Wick's car park?
No.
Yeah, something's not right. Do we think that it's a case of he got himself fit? Because when we had him on the podcast, he was clearly determined to get himself in shape and get himself over there almost ready to play. He'd sort of gone on about what weight he was going to be, and he promised Steve Price he was going to be the weight he needed to be to play where it was. Do we think that he's just never got fit, Dennis? Or do we think he's had a series of hamstring injuries where he's just not been able to run and get fit?
Yeah, I mean, you look how he did it. He wasn't doing a hamstring when he was in full stride. It was almost like just pulled up. It didn't look like it was a serious one, but it looked like something that he possibly would have been carrying for a while. So, yeah, I think his fitness has probably been hindered.
We might as well go on to it now. I was both surprised and disappointed when I heard on Sunday that they were going to line up with Ratchford at centre. I thought it was one too many changes when we lost one second row player and we moved our strike centre to second row. We moved the guy who's been playing standoff to right centre and we left the guy at fullback who has openly said it's a bit of a stretch for him to play fullback at the minute, no matter how good he's been over his career. We looked far better in that early second half when he moved to centre and Ratchford went to fullback.
I mean, that's the elephant in the room, isn't it? We should say we've had almost... I can't remember a game apart from possibly one last year where we've had so much correspondence that's come in towards Steve Price over the past 24 hours. I mean, it would take all night to read them out, but generally the main consensus is that on two points that he's picking the wrong team, so he's not helping himself. It's all very well to lose, but we're all sort of shaking our heads at his team selection at times. And then the other one that now has started to keep coming up in all the conversations is, you know, really the fact that he's staying and then leaving at the end of the year, it's just not working, and possibly that might happen with Powell at Castleford. Dennis, what are you making of the situation at the moment?
Well, you know, there's another point just before we get onto that, that the tackling during the first half was shocking. It was like me tackling my bar of soap in the bath.
Is it on a rope?
No, it's not. No. It's not, actually. They don't do that anymore.
Do they not?
I don't think so. I'm going to cover it in the fails of the unexpected.
I think almost your reaction sort of sums it up. We're all a bit sort of bemiffed by it, aren't we? No one can kind of quite put their finger on it, Sam.
You know what I've said? I feel it's right that he's going, but I'm fully behind him this year. I've also said, of course, if we lost five in a row, he's likely to be out, but that'd be regardless of whether he was leaving at the end of the year. I think it's been refreshing to see him drop Blake Austin because he wasn't performing, and refreshing to see him not automatically bring back Lynham when he was fit, because Thewlis has been performing well. But I did feel that yesterday it was making positional changes. He made three changes when one would have sufficed, in my opinion. And we looked at sixes and sevens on that right-hand side for the first 20, 25 minutes, maybe even for the first half. It took them too long to get going.
I've been watching Warrington for 40 years. I've never been as deflated under a coach as Steve Price. I feel so removed from this team. I listen to those press conferences and I'm like, here we go again. Here we go again. I mean, and I watched John Dorahay as coach for Warrington. So, I mean, I've got my standards. I just wish he'd get on that plane now with his family. I mean, I think they're due to fly back in August or July. They're booked on flights to come back. I don't think it would do us any harm whatsoever to just put a bit of zest back into the club, because you look at the comments when Warrington post anything now on Twitter or Facebook, the comments are just insulting underneath. We've done votes on this podcast where clearly everyone's ready for a change and a break. He wants to come back to Australia and build his house. Why on earth he can't get on that plane in August and give Breers and Henderson the opportunity, with a few months of the season left, to show their worth, to put their sort of coaching manuals in the shop window to see what they can get next season. I just think it would do everyone a favour. I don't think he's enjoying it. I don't think the players are enjoying it. The fans are certainly not enjoying it. I just think now is the time to try and get behind this club. And I watch the games now, and I honestly admit, when we're losing, I'm almost like, go on, Huddersfield, score another try. Because I want to see a consecutive run of losses just so we can get our season back on track. Because as a Warrington fan, I am so removed from what I'm seeing under the coaching at Warrington in the past 18 months. Dennis?
I just wrote, my cock was wrinkly and shriveled at this point.
All right, let's move on. 43rd minute, perfect start for the Wire with Inglis forcing the ball down in the tackle. Widdop's on target and it's 26. Got a really good message from Mike, who lives down in Melbourne. He wrote to basically say that, you know, having watched Melbourne every week, and we've spoke about this on the podcast, Sam, that, you know, we've not got any depth in our attacking line.
No.
He can't believe that we're not giving Inglis the ball 2 or 3 metres back from where he's getting it to build up steam, to let him sum things up, to get that big fen going and that big turn of pace that he's got when he's close to the line of determination. A good try, but again, really flat across the field.
It was really flat, but I don't think it was a big surprise that we swapped round Inglis and Ratchford. And this time, Ratchford drew the man, gave Inglis the ball in a little bit of space, and he was strong enough to carry two men over the line. The other way round, I don't think Ratchford scores that try. Finally, we were in the right place.
Hmm. Dennis, what are you making of that attacking line? Are we getting a bit over this? Are we just talking about this same old flat line every week? Is that all it is?
It isn't. It's just everything within 5 metres. I think since you brought it up again last week, I was watching this game and I was looking for, you know, a couple of times where, you know, we were pretty much set. And I think in one of the tries coming up, that was the only time I think that we had, like, you know, proper, you know, people running from 20, 30 metres away. And it paid off.
What are we making of Huddersfield? I mean, they seem to be, from what I can see, and, you know, people are saying that they've turned a corner with Watson. They've got lots of lovely ball handlers in that side. Everyone seems to know what they want to do, what their job is within the team. Don't seem to have that same sort of frenetic pace that Warrington has when they get close to the line. Just seem to be calm in the way that they've got dummy runners, they draw their man, and they get it out wide. And boy, I tell you what, Cesar, what a player he is. He bosses that team around the field.
He does boss them around. But this might sound strange when we just lost the game. I was disappointed in them. I felt we gifted them a 12-point head start, and if we'd have come out, we didn't, but if we'd have come out in the same manner as we did against Catalan Dragons for 2 weeks in a row with that same aggression, because as soon as we got on a roll in the second half, they had nothing. It was, and we piggybacked them down the field. So I think they're quite a conservative team with what exactly, as you say, a couple of very nice ball handlers.
I mean, I'm feeling now, listening to you, Per, it's like I'm watching a different game. I mean, Sam, do you remember what we said about Ian Watson planning to win this game last week as we left the podcast, you know?
My point is, I think we lost it. I don't think he...
I don't see it that way at all, Sam. I think Huddersfield were brilliant in that first half. I think Watson did an absolute coaching personified job on Warrington for that first 40 minutes.
I mean, the other thing as well is that, right, so we got ourselves in a right mess after the first half. It was absolutely awful.
Yes.
And then what does the coach do at halftime? What does Price do? Did he do that? Did he turn that around? Did he really give him a good sort of hairdryer effect or whatever you want to call it and really set it straight to motivate everyone? I think the motivation possibly would have come from the players themselves rather than Price, if you ask me.
The thing I really like about Watson is not only the fact I think he's a very good coach and he gets a lot out of teams that haven't really got that much quality through them. And there's no doubt they've got an absolute weapon with Cesar. I like what he said after the game. I like the fact that he'd gone into that dressing room at half-time and he said, boys, this isn't going to continue. At some point, they're going to get the momentum and they're going to come back at us. And I think just the way that he set that up and he had that sort of calming influence in the dressing room at half-time, when Wire did get back into it, they still thought about it and they still got that winning try to get them ahead and win the game. I just think we were totally outcoached yet again by Watson for what, the third time in the space of a year?
He does talk fast as well, doesn't he? Just got to put that out there.
All right, 50th minute. After a great drive from Akawala, Austin gets a slap round the chops from the resulting penalty. Clark taps and goes to the blind side, dummying and with strength and determination gets over to score. Widdup slots over the kick and we're back to 12-20. How many minutes did Akawala do, Sam? I mean, he seemed to come on and change it all. He made that bursting run and all of a sudden we're on the front foot.
He did, and the lad I sit next to said the same thing. He was keen to see what Akawala brings. He made a bursting run, very good description, got us on the front foot, and then he went off after about 8 minutes.
Oh, I know, and he got the crowd going and all. You could hear it on the telly that he got the crowd going.
Can they not? Like, you know, we talked about Ben Murdoch-Masilla being used very well at the Warriors. I just thought after 30 minutes, we needed something to lift us. And I thought, you know, can he not play for 10 minutes before half time?
Well, there was a case in point that with 13 minutes to go before half time, Mike Cooper goes off for head injury assessment. So a prop forward goes off, you'd think, perfect time to bring on a prop forward. Akawala, 13 minutes, he can do that, no problem. But he brought Matty Davis on to replace him. And it didn't make sense.
I know this podcast isn't supposed to be silenced, but can I just visually point out that the three of us are all just shaking our heads now? I mean, I really hope we keep Akawala, because I want to see if we have exactly the same scenario with him under Powell. I want to see if there's something about Akawala that says, oh, boss, I can't play more than 10 minutes because I come out in spots. I just want to see if Powell uses Akawala the way that we hope he can be used.
Interestingly, though, I compared him with Mulhern because it's chalk and cheese in terms of style of play, but there are two additional props, if you like. Akawala is making more yards per carry, but he's doing nowhere near as much defensive work. He's giving more penalties away, missing more tackles. So with a conservative coach like Price, he's going to look at that as a negative rather than the positive he can do when carrying the ball forward.
I was thinking back to some of the packs we've had over the years and, you know, some of the mean bastards we've had in the packs over the years. And I know rugby league's tough and hard, and you only have to look at Mike Cooper's face to see, boy, you won't want to be out there. But this lot are tough, but they're not mean bastards. There's not any mongrel in that pack at all. We've got Hill and Cooper who do their job and do it very, very well, and we've got Clark who's action man in between them. But I look in the second row, we've got a sports car in Ben Curry, but he's not a dodgem car. And then you've got these... It reminds me of what Arsenal did under Wenger. It was like they couldn't buy anyone that was over 5'8" and weighed more than 11 stone. You know, they went down this tappy-tappy Barcelona route. And we seem to do the same. You know, we've got Matt Davis, who when he stands next side Blake Austin, smaller than Blake Austin. You've got Jason Clark. There's just no grunt. And then, you know, Toby King, to move him into the second row, he's not a Paul Cullen. You move Paul Cullen into the second row and he wallops everyone, or Ben Westwood, or, you know, Trent Waterhouse, all these guys that are strong and tough. Toby King's a lovely player, but he's not a menace.
Will Olivier Holmes help when he comes?
Well, hold on to that thought as well, Dennis. But Rob, I think you've summed it up really well there.
Thank you, Sam.
As a lovely player of King and sports car, if you like, I think you use the analogy as Curry, but no dodgem cars, no one who's going to go and smack hell out of people. I agree. I can't disagree with that.
Davis isn't a second row forward. Davis is some kind of utility hooker. He's never passed a ball in his life. You know, he's just a box standard player. And the other one that I can't quite comprehend, and I spoke about this on the podcast before he even played a game for Warrington, was Rob Butler. I watched 10 minutes of YouTube of Rob Butler playing for London and went, he's not big enough. They've just signed another Davis.
Yeah, well, we'll have a look next week because, although I've not seen the result, I think Akwala's going to be banned. So presumably that means Butler will play next week.
The one that I would keep out of all of them, if you gave me an option at the moment of Jason Clark, Matty Davis, Rob Butler or Mulhern, as you've pointed out in the stats, Sam, Mulhern to me is the one that has been the find. He's not brilliant,
no,
but he does his job and he's not quite big enough. But the other three...
He's an upgrade on what we had last year, isn't he? He's an upgrade on last year.
He's an upgrade, but to put those three in together and then move Toby King in there... Sorry, it's just beyond a joke. Okay, 59th minute and the Wolves' best move of the night. Quick passing from left to right with dummy runners, fast hands, soft hands and players drawing their men. Gives Thulis a try unopposed in the corner. Widdop misses the kick and we're down by two at 20 points to 18. Best try of the night, Dennis.
Indeed, and as we've already mentioned, running from deep, everybody knew what they were doing. Passing going along the line. I thought Mamo's pass to Thulis was the best bit for me. It was superb. And in the corner, it was like textbook. Why can't they do that more often?
Yeah, the bit for me that I think was the most significant was Blake Austin finally drawing a man and passing to his right. Something I've wanted to see, and his confidence seemed to be gaining all the way through the half. And I want to see him do that more. I'm not expecting him to produce glory every 10 minutes, but you'd expect to see a star standoff do that a couple of times a game, wouldn't you?
It was a beautiful
move, and we were well on top of that stage.
Well, I mean, this is another thing now, because Price said in his press conference, you know, how wonderful we've been in the second half. Can I just point out now, we're 2 points behind with 20 minutes to go. We're not two Yes. points behind with 2 minutes to go. We've still got a quarter of the game to go. So we're in the game. We're at home at the Halliwell Jones. We're in front of 4,000 fans all screaming for us to win. Yet apparently we had the best second half. We made up for it in the second half. We're on the 59th minute there and we're 2 points down.
And right at the start of this podcast, I said break it into 20 minutes. And this was one of the reasons for me. We were bang on top. We were playing really well. And then we start to force it, make mistakes and give penalties away in a 5 minute spell and lose all of that momentum.
I think they're getting tired at that stage, Sam. You know, that's, you know, when you lose penalties away and stuff.
Yeah, but Huddersfield were surely tired. Did not touch the ball hardly for 20 minutes.
They were disciplined, following a process. Really following the process really tightly.
67th minute, Giants score. In a lead-up to a try, Chris Hill gives a penalty away as Huddersfield come off their own 20. A set of tackles later and a beautiful time pass from Cesar sees Kenny Edwards have too much momentum for Ratchford to stop. Cesar gives Wyatt hope, though, missing the kick at 18:24. Now, we've spoken about Hill's penalty count. We had Tony Barrow on the podcast at Christmas, who said he gives too many penalties away. You blew that myth a little bit, Sam, in terms of that he's not giving that many away in comparison to anyone else. But what you pointed out, and again, I think, comes over in this penalty game, he gives them away at crucial times in the game. Yeah. It seems a Chris Hill penalty leads to disaster. I don't know why, but it's like he has bad luck. When he gives a penalty away, it's a foregone conclusion. In the next set of six, the opposing side will score a try.
It's all downhill.
Oh, very good, Dennis. Not as good as your Macintosh.
And regardless of whether it was Hill or not, it was a poor, poor penalty to give away when the opposition are just inside their own 20 metres and you're going to keep them down there. And just to piggyback them into your own half, poor. Very poor.
What happens to him? Is he tired? Does he get a rush of blood to the head? What is it in that situation that it's always Chris Hill?
Because Akuala doesn't do more than 8 minutes. Basically it, isn't it?
And also, to be fair, Matty Davis and Jason Clark couldn't reach that high to get the play around the head. No, so
he was actually on the floor going down, wasn't he? And he clocked him. It wasn't a bad one at all. It was just
one of those things. Sam, are you a bath man or a shower boy? Where do you sort of go with this?
Shower, unless my back's playing up.
What do you think Chris Hill is, Dennis? Would you see him as a bath man or in the shower?
Well, it's his field, isn't it? I mean, we've got to be very careful going on this territory, being that he's in that area.
He's a plumber.
So it wouldn't surprise me if it's a bath, but it's not a normal shape bath. You know, it's got like a little pouty area where you can rest you.
Like the Flake advert?
Yeah.
Did you see, I saw on The Guardian yesterday, there's a shortage of flakes in the UK. Did you see that? There's a shortage of flakes. Everyone's come out of lockdown and everyone wants an ice cream. And apparently the flake that goes into a 99 is not, it's not the full size. They don't snap it in half. It's a manufactured flake that's half the size. And they've run out of them in the UK. They're not blaming Brexit. They're not blaming anything like that. They're just saying that they just were just, you know, too many people eating flakes in the last week.
Obviously, it's the fun facts that we were dishing out a few weeks ago about not melting flakes, isn't it?
74th minute, Curry touches down, but video ref rules Toby King has propelled the ball forward whilst challenging for the kick across field. Sam, we've gone away from our kick to the corner for Toby King. It's now put a big fuck-off kick up in the air from Blake Austin's foot.
Yes, the big fuck-off boot in the air. Yes, that's what we'll call it. I think that's perfect for the tactic.
The last person who used to do that was Jonathan Davis. Yes. Jonathan Davis used to put the big spiral up. And Tyrone Roberts did a little bit of it, but I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be the new weapon now. If Clark can't manage to burst over the line in a set of six, it's going to be give it to Blake, put his flaky kicks up. Unbelievable.
Well, they had to do something different because Toby King obviously wasn't standing on the wing, was he? He was, you know, in the centre. So what else did they have? Kick it up in the middle.
Oh, dear. Okay, 77th minute, Wire kick out from their own sticks and elect to go short. Huddersfield moments later with Warrington desperately defending their own try line, are caught offside. Cesar takes the two and it looks like it's game over at 26-18. Bit early to go short, Sam, or would you have gone short on that one, mate?
I can understand why they did.
Because of shit.
But again, it was a poor penalty to give away. The referee shouted, "Sitter, you're offside," and he carried on running, pushed somebody in the back, and 2 points. And we didn't have much chance left there, but whatever chance we had seemed to go.
I felt a bit sorry for Sitter on that one because Ratchford was about 7 metres offside. Ratchford was further out than bloody Sitter was. I think maybe the angle on his nose, the shading, fell across the field. They couldn't quite see him.
She wouldn't keep saying that.
79th minute, following a short kickoff, Wire receive a penalty. Widdop has no choice but to take the two, enabling from the restart the Wolves to have one last throw of the dice at 20-26. The final few plays see Warrington giving air to the ball, but it's not enough. Final score, Warrington 20, Huddersfield 26. Sam, you were there. The atmosphere, I mean, it did make a difference to the game. There's no doubt about it. You know, when Warrington weren't going forward, you could hear the crowd starting to get, you know, a little bit agitated. Sum up the atmosphere, mate. How was it?
Anticipation before the game. Deflation around about 25 minutes.
All right, that's enough of your sex life with your missus. Just tell us about the game.
Grumbling at half-time.
Ooh,
and then excitement started to build all the way up to 20 points to 18. And then it all went away again when Edwards scored the try.
I thought possibly they were going to pick up, you know, a select 4,000 that were very much, you know, the kind of 4,000 you get at a Tory party conference. You know, everyone behind the team, no matter how much bollocks that comes out. But there were still a few fans there with the Sam that were sort of, you know, against the current regime.
Yeah. I don't know, as you say, against the... Don't forget, I'm in the seats, Sam, not with the proletariat.
Could you not hear him, Sam, over your swearing? Is that what the problem was?
I hadn't had a drink yesterday. I was completely sober. He's just had a coffee.
Is it the drink that makes
it's the drink. Yeah. Oh yes.
Oh dear. It took me weeks to get over the game when I went to the game with Sam. Couldn't believe he was sitting there screaming.
Listen, I've heard that they're bringing in extra checks next week, Sam, so they'll be testing your Robinson's barley water spiked with vodka.
Did anyone tune in for the press match Price press conference? I gave up. I actually got out of the bath at that stage because my toes were getting a bit wrinkly.
That was fucking annoying and all, because basically he straight away launched into, oh, but we played really well in the second half. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Did you not see the first half? Sorry.
Dude, that's a bit strong, Dennis, at this time.
Is it?
Right. As I said, we've had endless amounts of sort of tweets, messages, whatever else you want to call them, that have come into us over the past 24 hours. I'll read this one out. This one came in from Dan Lewis. He was kind of first to jump on the bandwagon. He wrote, "When are we going to let Price go? In the post-match interview tonight, he was lost what to say. He generally looked like his mind was already in Australia. It's not helping the team or him. The team on paper tonight was very strong, but playing so many out of position was a terrible idea. English should be nowhere near fullback. King in the second row, when week in, week out, he's talked about as being one of the best centres around. This season is going to be a very long one for the fans if things stay the same as they are. Looking forward to the next episode. Keep up the great work, Dan." Oh, thank you, Dan. That's very kind of you to say. I think that kind of summarises it quite well, doesn't it?
I was going
to
say, you could cut all our review out, couldn't you, and just read that?
Should we just read that as an official statement and do none of the podcast? Would that be the best way to go?
I think that's what we should do.
Has been suspended from Super League due to in-house betting irregularities. Doro backed himself to return a better player, saying he was willing to gamble that the break would edge his bets towards making a punt for the first team. Ben Thaler and Professor Steve Broomhead are to bring out a new range of men's underwear and corsets. A tender for the manufacturing of the attire has now opened. It's expected the contract will be commissioned to the Chinese, making the factory, along with the Great Wall of China, the only two man-made structures visible from space. And finally, the Rugby Football League announces the Challenge Cup semi-final doubleheader will be held at Lee Sports Village Stadium, with each club entitled to only 600 tickets. The governing body had set their sights on larger and more attractive venues to accommodate more fans, but unfortunately the alternatives were fully booked, such as Benny Westwood's food trailer and the vandalised telephone box on Orford Lane.
Okay, well, there are the headlines. Let's move on to the stories. Lee Sports Village will host the Challenge Cup semi-finals on Saturday, the 5th of June, with Hull versus Saints at 2:30pm, followed by Wire and Cass at 5pm. Each team will receive 600 tickets. The RFL said, "We have every reason to be hopeful of a much bigger crowd at Wembley on July the 17th for the final." It's been given a bit of stick, this, Sam, based on the fact that it's such a small ground and they're only allowed 25% in.
I can only think that, number one, the ground's available.
Oh, it'll be available for sure, Lee Sports Stadium. I don't think you two are playing there that weekend.
Exactly. And possibly it's cheap rather than hiring a football stadium.
Can I just redo that bit and maybe we'll edit out, because I said you two and it makes me sound a bit old. So I'll just do it again. I tell you what, I bet Dua Lipa aren't playing there that weekend.
Never mind Dua Lipa. What fucking gay anthem did you have behind the bloody highlights last week?
The Weeknd. I think it was The Weeknd, wasn't it? Oh, Stormzy last week, I think we had behind the highlights. Geez. Sorry, Sam, you continue.
No, I'd rather speak about the Dua Lipa and what the kids get down to.
I've just realised I'm on an aquaponics tour on the 5th of June.
Oh, bully for you. So,
yeah.
How far's the pipe up your arse for that?
I don't know, yeah. I'll tune in about that.
Even if I could get a ticket, I'm having jab number two on that day, so...
Oh! In it goes. Boomf! The 2021 Rugby League World Cup organisers admit it looks like the Cup now is in jeopardy with a prolonged ban on international flights affecting players coming from New Zealand, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Cook Islands, PNG and Australia. A World Cup spokesman said, "We recognise that there are still challenges ahead, but we will continue to work relentlessly with an overwhelming desire to deliver the biggest and best ever Rugby League World Cup later this year. We remain extremely hopeful and optimistic that the tournament will go ahead as planned, but we are realistic about the challenges, not least those which involve international travel and quarantine." Have you got your tickets, Dennis? Are you going to go?
Yeah, I'd just like to say they went on to say that the final contested between England and Wales will be played at Garda Grange Park.
Oh dear. I was looking at flights last night, boys, to try and get back to the UK. And the cheapest flight you can get at the moment is with Qantas, $8,600 one way.
Bloody hell.
What's that in real money?
Just under $6,000.
That's all right, isn't it?
For one flight one way, Dennis, £6,000.
One way. Right. Okay.
I normally get an Emirates flight for about $2,100. Yeah, it normally takes about $10,000 to get the family back. But there's no flights at the moment. So I know that'll be different for the rugby league boys, but that is going to be a hell of a lot of money sitting in business class. I work with a law company in Sydney that have been bringing back their... I mean, it's kind of stopped now, but they sort of evacuated London during all this. And they had to bring about 70 high-flying lawyers back from London to Sydney. And they were paying just under $20,000 one-way flights.
Wow.
For everyone. I mean, these guys and girls bill about, you know, $2,500 an hour. But it doesn't make any difference. They are the prices at the moment. You know, Lufthansa threw a plane into Sydney the other day that had about 12 people on board. You know,
have you turned into a fucking travel agent now or something? What's going on?
How dare you know Judith Chalmers is on my wall, Dennis?
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms. It's time for Sam to talk shite for 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
Okay, well, a few facts for you today. I didn't say anything about the match, really. I think I should just highlight Mike Cooper. 34 tackles, just one miss, 21 carries for 185 metres. So I think we'll just highlight him. And Jake Mamo also doing 123 metres. But this week, I took a request, didn't I?
Yes, so you did.
I took a request to look at McMeekin. But first, a couple of side issues in the Championship. Toulouse Olympique, that's how you say it, I think, Olympique.
Ooh, good French.
Beat Whitehaven 66-0 this week. The previous week, they beat Widnes 70-0. And two games prior to that, they beat London 24-0. They've currently played won five games, scored 225 points. And an average of 45 points per game. And
should we not get a scout out there to have a look at Toulouse?
Yeah, they look like they're all players that Catalan's rejected. And in the Warrington under-19s, the young man with number 6 on his back scored a try and 7 goals. And that number 6 was Rhys Brays. So we'll keep an eye on him coming through.
Doesn't he weigh about 4 stone, Rhys Brays?
He looks as skinny as Lee did at that similar age, to be fair. Mm. Anyway, on to Dennis's request. Thought that we should have bought Mike McMeekin if we could. Mm. To be fair, Mike probably fancied himself going to the south of France and a bit of warm weather and a bit of culture away from Castleford. But I decided to look at second rows, and I looked at who Shane Warne has picked for the England train-on team. And we've got John Bateman, Ben Curry, Liam Farrell, Elliot Whitehead, who's obviously currently over in Australia. We've got no Mike McMeekin, and we've got no James Bentley, who they keep going on about at St Helens. So I decided to look at those players. Decided to look at those players, look at the stats so far this year, and I've also included Jack Hughes, because he's our other second row, and Olivier Holmes, because all reports say Olivier is coming to live in Warrington next year. I looked at how many tries they've scored, how many try assists, how many tackles, what their tackle success rate was, number of metres they made, clean breaks, negative playing errors and penalties, and I ranked them in order. And if you were top, you got 1 point. And if you're the worst player in them seven, you got 7 points. The player with the fewest points and therefore the best season so far to date is Mike McMeekin.
Ah, excellent. And what was his, I was going to say, top sort of bits?
Three try assists, 96.33% tackle success rate, and 12 offloads. John Bateman was second, which you might well expect, but John Bateman scoring particularly high in number of tackles and number of metres made. Ben Curry was third. Ben Curry had the best tackle success rate out of all of them and has scored the most tries, or equal most, with Liam Farrell, who is fourth best, playing most of the season so far at centre. And then Olivier Holmes, and then way behind, I'm afraid, Jack Hughes and James Bentley. James Bentley came bottom of the pile. So there you go, Dennis. Good spot. Mike McMeekin is playing well.
And he's a mean bastard as well.
Yeah, out of that is that I forgot all about Jack Hughes this week. I completely forgot, but there you go. Why can he not make the squad then? If he's top of the stats, why is he not in the consideration?
Well, that's interesting, Tim. Whether he gets added to, last year he was considered a bit flaky.
Oh, not another one. You can't have two flakes.
There's no flakes around.
But this year, as I say, three tries so far, three try assists, his tackles at 96%, his breaking tackles. He's making 7 metres per carry, a couple of clean breaks, plenty of offloads, not many penalties, not many errors.
What's the sun shine in Warrington compared to where he is in the south of France?
I'll check it.
Oh, here we go.
I would suspect we're probably at least 2 degrees, maybe 3 degrees per day cooler on average, and probably 2 hours a day less sunshine than there is down over there.
2 hours. Oh, that's very generous, Sam.
the app's frozen. It's just got rain in Warrington for the next 9 days. Something must be wrong with the app.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, lads. Yes. Who fancies a bit of sunshine?
And time now to head back for the next instalment of our seafaring sitcom, Mutiny on the HJ. Regular listeners have critiqued the excellent quality of the script writing, describing it as some of the most stimulating oral work ever performed. On reflection, one has to say the audience probably hasn't sampled my deep throat guzzler of an impression of Hamlet. Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him fellatio.
Would you bloody believe it? Is that Ferdinand Nelson? So what you're saying is I apply the coefficient of variation to my tactical tic-tacs, using integration and differentiation to determine and simplify the algebraic fraction to a kick to the corner for Toby King, and gee, I can improve my percentage by 1%? Oh, cheers, you flaming galah!
I wish you wouldn't use Nelston for your research, Stevie. You know he can confuse you.
Oh, sorry, Rolfie. Ever since I lost the confidence of Commodore Fitzpatrick, cabin boy Brayers and midshipman Henderson, and first mate Widdop, the...
Yes, Stevie, yes. Basically, everyone of the player's crew. Oh, what a lovely day. I've not felt such humidity since being sat in the Leeds Rhino's lap dancing box, watching Mr. Agar performing a reverse cowgirl on Gathy Hetherington's knee.
Was he enjoying it, Rolfo?
Oh, I really couldn't say. His face is hard to read, especially when it looks like a bulldog licking piss off a nettle. Talking of piss, where have you taken us this time, Stevie?
I think if you'd like to take a look starboard, Admiral Rolfie, I think you'll find that we've anchored at our next destination, the cultural capital full of history, adventure and sunshine, Haddisfield.
Well, this is exceptional, Stevie. I just knew you came good in the end. Are you sure this is Yorkshire, Stevie? I'm not sure I've ever seen palm trees and blue sky in Huddersfield.
Oh, Rolfie, didn't you mean Haddisfield, Jamaica?
Oh, tackle sacks.
Oh, yous dead set won't believe this, Rolfie. There's a welcoming party.
Oh, well, that's excellent. Oh, look, Stevie, it's Captain Watson rowing out to meet us. He must still be honeymooning in Ken Davies' locker.
Shall I tell him to fuck off?
Oh, don't be bitter, Stevie. Perhaps we should offer him lunch. Get second cook's mate Westwood to open the 1876 Pressed Luncheon Gallery.
Oi, oi, Admiral Rimsey.
Ahoy, Captain Watson. And how may I be of assistance?
To be fair to me, I come to have a look at your players' crew. I suppose I'm looking to make a trade, you know. I'm looking at my outfit, and although they're an outstanding set of lads, you know, I hear that you've got some crew that are looking to jump ship, you know, and of course we're struggling a little bit.
Oh, that does sound like a good idea. Let's go down and dine in the officers' mess, or as we say on board, Captain Stevie's quarters. Chop, chop, Stevie. Read out today's menu.
For entree, we've got an Aidan Caesar salad.
Yeah, I'd say the Caesar salad is the highlight of the menu. You know, it's probably been the best for us so far, but looking at this, it does smell a bit off.
Yes, it was more in season last year.
For our main course, it's HMS HJ Boathouse Special, Loinum Spaghetti Meatballs.
You know, I do consider myself a details type of person, you know, and looking at this, I want to know what's best for us. What kind of meat is it?
Oh, well, that's the finest Super League offal available to humanity. It's plucked straight from the players' crew this morning.
And for dessert, GI Lado with a flaky Blake on top.
Oh, yeah, no worries, yeah, that'll be great, yeah. I'll go with that sour old crusty crumble over there.
Oh, well, that's no way to talk about Stevie. Tea or coffee, Captain Watson? Or perhaps I could interest you in some of Stevie's resilient rum?
There's only tea, Rolfie. We're all out of Leilani lattes.
fucking splendid. Absolutely fucking splendid. Now, I was having a think now, and I think I might change my mind. Is there any way I can have a word with Commodore Fitzpatrick to see if I can come on board and join you?
I am sorry, Captain Watson, but I do think you had your chance at the helm when you were in the Salford Quays dry dock.
Hey, Rolfie, never mind the dock. More like a bit of a cock.
Oh, that's very good, Stevie. You know, I think perhaps you're finally finding your sea legs. Quick now, Stevie. Have Anchorman Akawala throw Captain Watson overboard.
Hey, come on now, lads. Come on now. I'm a tactical genius, I am. What are you doing? Don't do that. Hey, I haven't even had a chance to set the snooze off.
Oh, that's excellent work all round, Stevie. Oh, right. Would you get me the Sailor's Weekly? I'm off to my cabin for a meeting with Master Bates.
This week, I heard that tropical music. I heard the sea, the waves breaking on the shore, and I wanted to go on holiday. Yeah. And then I heard the galah, the, you know, the tropical birds. It all evoked a nice holiday.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had a scouser come on talking real fast. And that took me back down to earth.
Hey, Sam, I had to slow it down. You should have seen the soundbite he sent through.
He talks fast, doesn't he, Ian Watson? He really does talk fast.
I didn't realise he was Scouse, to be fair. Like,
I don't think he is. Is he? Is he Scouse?
He sounds it.
Oh dear. Well, it might just be a rumour. But do we fancy some rumours?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yes.
Chris, Stevie, hit the music!
Rumours! Everybody needs good rumours! With a little understanding, you can find your perfect blend! Come on, Stevie, join in, lad! Rumours! Should be there for one another! That's when good rumours become good friends.
Jesus, I'm going to have to sing this at Lee as well. Christ.
I reckon that's going to go to number one, that one. I really do. Now, Dennis, have you got any rumours for us, mate, this week? Because it was a very popular section last week, this new
was
section.
It?
Oh, yes. I can see the analytics. We spiked when this came on. Made up for the massive trough of Fails of the Unexpected.
Well, the best... I heard that. The rumour this week is rumoured Daryl Powell is looking at properties in Warrington, in the Warrington area. He was seen driving down Thelwall Lane in Latchford, where he stopped for a house viewing. And talking to some of the neighbours on this house viewing, one of the neighbours told me he changed his mind last minute when he heard Flaky Blake had recently purchased in the area. He left stating, far too expensive for little return, and that it's lacked any kind of inspiration and character to build anything around it. But following his comments about Blake Austin, he said he wanted 5 bedrooms.
Sam, we had a lovely message in, and very polite, actually. It was passed on to me from Madam Boyd, who the gentleman asked all about, I think it was Peter Bond, he asked all about Madam Boyd's chip shop and hopefully it was going well, etc. And he wanted to know news on Toby King. Now, Madam Boyd's got nothing at all, but he did write, please, can you let us know what's happening with Toby King? So do we have anything on that at all?
The only thing I've heard is that he too would like to see a bit more sunshine, which leads me to think Catalans, but all over the press over the last 2 days is suddenly St. Helens are up in their game, but I've not had any confirmation of that.
If I was sort of behind the PR spin of Catalans, I'd be sending him lots of pictures of sort of people swimming in, you know, in fresh water, because he doesn't half like posting himself on Instagram swimming in lakes in the north of England.
He does, and he likes to go on a good bike ride. So, you know, you Tour de France country down there, plenty of hills to go up and down.
Is it the Pyrenees or the Alps?
Pyrenees.
Very good.
We've had a message from one of our ex-players. This is an exclusive on the podcast. You may have read in the press last week that Chris Sandow is looking to return to the game of rugby league. And lo and behold, we got a message from him at 8:45 p.m. Sydney time yesterday. And he's written to say, could we ask the club for him to play at Wyre next year?
Oh, blimey.
So there you go. It came out of the blue. He said, hi, mate. Could you ask the club if you could play for Warrington next year? So exclusive on the podcast, we are now Chris Sandow's agent.
I was going to say, how much are you taking as a cut? You were talking about money earlier. So how much of a cut do you want to get to that plane ticket you need?
A couple of bars of Imperial leather. I'm quite happy with that.
It's time now for Fails or the Unexpected.
A wise man believes only in lies, trusts only in the absurd, and learns to expect the unexpected.
I personally think this story is funny. But if your sense of humour doesn't happen to be the same as mine, then I'm afraid you're going to be a bit disturbed by what goes on.
Well, this week, in the unexpected file, of course, we're going to look at team selection. Following our discussion whether Steve Price was in fact a tactical genius last week, he surprised us again with his unexpected team selection this week, turning the team on its head with a magic roundabout or positional change of positional changes that would have had Zebedee jumping up and down with delight. Yeah. Yes, the clusterfuck of nonsensical avant-garde team selection draws parallels with Mr. Rusty and his ability to get anyone to ride on his roundabout. There you go. Within all this chaos, we also witnessed the new Austin randomizer sizable elevation kick. A variation on kicking to Toby King, where the hit and hope beauty would hopefully unlock the doors of perception for Stevie and his tactical tic-tacs. So where were these mistakes backfired? I think we can quite all agree that they backfired and they were quite costly. So I was having a look at, you know, some sort of things that have backfired in history. Not necessarily on Google, Rob, so you can stop looking. These, you know, I'm trying to compare, you know, some of it, like, you know, some faux pas of mistakes that were made by trying to make such changes and marketing these as a way of actually, you know, bringing a different look of the side, which he tried to do, and then he tried to explain away, saying, "Oh, look how good we are with this and the other." Anyway, where I'm going with this is that. I looked at Greg Inglis at fullback. I think that was the most obvious one. We discussed that. And interestingly enough, he's probably the most expensive or has earned the most in years gone by. And it probably cost us the most in terms of what happened. And looking at some like expensive mistakes, 1992, Hoover, the company who sponsors Warrington, offered free flight tickets on a purchase of more than £100 of its product. But the offer cost the company £50 million after a huge response from customers who were interested in getting the free flight and not really bothering about the Hoover product.
How did they suck that up?
Well, interesting. I'll get to that point in a minute. There's another one. Then when you think about Toby King, it's been speculated that he was offered $140,000 to go to Hull KR. That was a rumour last week. Yeah, I think it was. Anyway, I found something that was $140,000, so shut up. Fiat made a £140,000 mistake. In 1994, as part of a promotional campaign, they sent out 50,000 anonymous love letters to young women in Spain with the intention of revealing its identity 4 to 5 days later. The campaign backfired, and instead of curiosity, it spread panic and fear among stalkers, among women. So they were all concerned that they were being
stalked. Hang on, so the panic and fear was amongst the stalkers, or was it amongst the women? Because you just said then it spread fear amongst the stalkers.
Let's just re-record this bit, because I know the stalkers could be quite worried about that. The campaign backfired, and instead of curiosity, it spread panic and fear of stalker among women. It's written strangely. Anyway, they were fined. And then at the lower end of the scale, I think who else moved? We had Ratchford in the centres, didn't we? About £100,000 of player there. And KFC, they presented their product in Beijing in 1987 with the phrase "finger licking good," had translated in Chinese to "we'll eat your fingers off." So they had cost them about £100,000. I did have one for Blake Austin, but I think this made more money than anything else. Electrolux had a slogan, "Nothing sucks like an Electrolux." So I thought that was quite apt for Austin. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, because obviously that floated your boat. Where am I?
Dennis? Fails. Was that fails or was that unexpected?
That was unexpected, that was. So fails.
But surely most of those that you've just mentioned are failures.
Well, it was unexpected, the team selection, yeah?
Yeah.
Because it backfired, and there were some analogies of backfiring.
Is that not a fail?
You've done your entire section in just that first bit, so that's excellent. Well done.
We'll move on now to predictions.
I've got fails. So this week, we saw the third appearance of Greg Inglis, and unfortunately, the failing of a hamstring.
Wow, that's unexpected.
That's fails. We're on fails now. Yes, Big Greg pushed his comeback to the limit, and as a result, will probably spend a few weeks or more on the sidelines. So why did his hamstring fail, we're all asking? Well, I've taken a look into this through some investigative journalism. Yes, I know that's a thing of the past, but it's what everybody wants to know.
It's to be expected.
So I've delved into the mechanics of hamstrings, the most common form of muscle injury, did you know?
Is it really?
No. Yes, it is, yeah.
Amongst sports people or amongst everybody?
Mostly sports people like me and you, Sam. Not like that fat loads of fucker over there.
My old boss went water skiing. We went water skiing at Penrith, and Mike, you should have seen his hamstring. He went off the jetty. It was like comedy moment. He went flying into the water, and the next day, his hamstring was completely blue. It was horrific. Carry on.
Lovely. What increases the risk of a hamstring injury? Well, sports.
Water skiing.
Yeah. Not warming up and stretching before activity. Tired, stiff, or tight hamstring muscles. Putting the bins out or something like that. Ooh, one to note there, Sam. Weak hamstring muscles. Sudden increase in the amount of training. Unequal strength in the hamstring muscles. Well, you know, he has gone from being out for a long time to suddenly starting training. So it is a common injury for people who do that. What are the signs and symptoms? Well, I think we've all seen it. Pain, swelling, feeling a pop or a tear, like your friend on the jetty.
Dennis, is this section called Fails of the Unexpected or just stating the bleeding obvious?
This is I'm getting onto it. Fails. Anyway, I was looking at treatments. This is where I'm going with this, because we want Greg back as soon as possible. We've got rest, plenty of rest, ice therapy, compression, elevation. But one of the best things for recovery is massage. So,
steady.
What do you mean, steady? Yeah. Oh, dear. I'm going to have to stop. No, I'm not. I can't even see what I've wrote. I scribbled this down. With massage offering the quickest and most effective way to overcome a hamstring injury, I went looking at the best massage parlour in the Northwest. So I've got some findings here. I did my research. I typed in cheap massage in the Northwest because obviously, you know, things are quite hard at the Warrington at the moment. And I think it's key to mention you should always put 5 stars in with your search, especially when you're using cheap. And I did a bit of research and I looked at The Sun, Gary Carter's paper, and there was Confessions of a Masseur in there. And here's a story was written by Shane on there. You can go and find this on The Sun if you like. I was once working on a very overweight woman who could only lie on her side. About 2 minutes into the hour, I could smell the distinct odour of human faeces. Oh. It occurred to me that this woman had just shit herself and none of it had escaped through a massive cheat. And he goes on to say, I'm a fairly open-minded guy, but I have a limit. And
what's this going to do with Greg Inglis's hamstring? Some woman shitting herself.
This is my
herself.
Research looking for, watching out for the pitfalls of massages. I found two in the area. This one's called Legs Work. It's on the outskirts of Warrington. They do all sorts. And I think, actually, they do a good massage, deep tissue massage. But one thing I did note, a bit of a negative, one of the reviews, worst wax ever. They're not very good at waxing. So if you were thinking of doing waxing, don't do it. It was probably the worst wax I've ever had. The therapist was over 20 minutes late. These things happen. However, she burnt me, they got whacked all over the place, all over my clothes, and ultimately she's broken a lot of hair. So I'm already seeing a lot of regrowth. I'm already seeing as much regrowth as around my bikini line as Lee Braze's beard. So I've ruled that one out. I've gone to this other one. It's called The One Massage. It did have one bad review, so I'll just warn you. This guy wrote... 736 RSA, didn't really give a name, so they just wrote, I visited this business several times over 4 years. I chose it precisely because it was not the sort of place to offer extras. However, I went this week for the first time in 12 months. There are new staff, and I also noticed on leaving, the latches have been added to the doors, closed if needed. Weird. Massage was fine, but then my visit was ruined by being offered extras. And also mocked for how shocked I was and how strongly I refused. Ultimately, a good service has been taken over and ruined. He then went on to say, I've now booked in every second Wednesday of the month for an early bird snatches the worm offer at $15.99 and VAT. So.
Predictions.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Time for our predictions as Wire this Saturday afternoon at the Halliwell Jones take on Castleford. Now, I'm really looking forward to this one, Sam. I mean, this throws up so many permutations with... two coaches that are going to leave at the end of the year, Powell coming over to Warrington next season, two teams that lost on the weekend. Who's going to get the response out of their players? First of all, do you think we're going to win?
I've not got a bloody clue, but I'm going to say yes.
Ooh.
I'm going to say yes. We're at home. I'll go yes this week. I'm less confident in the cup match.
How do you think we're going to line up? Do you think he'll sort of learn from his mistakes and put out a team that's a bit more realistic in terms of winning a game of rugby league?
Well, first of all, Jack Hughes will be back, won't he? So whilst he's not going to excite you going forward, he's going to bring a bit of solidity to that right-hand side. That surely means...
Sounds like that woman on a side.
Yeah. That surely means King will be back at centre and... Probably Greg won't be in the mix, will he? So team probably picks itself.
I mean, genuinely, looking at that research in hamstrings, I said to Rob earlier today, and I'm going to voice it, Rob, I'm going to say it, is that, you know, you look at that injury, that can you can never really get over that at a later age. And I wonder whether you could just hang his boots up now and think, you know what, I can't get back.
I suppose it's if it's one of these niggly things, he's just going to have to wait. If it's properly gone, then, yeah, fair enough, Dennis. But if it's just a little bit of a strain rather than a tear, but we'll find out, won't we, in the next couple of days.
I mean, God, I hope not, because I'm putting all my chips on having a run-in at the end of the season in the playoffs or something, and Greg sort of scoring the winning try, you know, to get us in the final or something.
Doing a fairy tale.
It's a dream.
Do you think it's going to be that classic price again? The Sky going to keep asking him when Inglis is coming back, and he'd be like, oh, is it a week away? And it's going to be like, we're not going to see him till like August again.
Yeah. Till the weather gets over 20 degrees, so you might be right, you might not. He might not play again.
Take the dog around, Sam, Saturday morning. Let's see what it does. Let's see what it does. I have a funny feeling it's going to be a big shitty mess up his wall.
What, the dog?
Yes, the dog, Dennis. Right, Dennis! Sorry.
Well, one thing I wish I was there to just get the crowd going, because who the crowd going to be cheering for from a coach perspective? I mean, that's going to be one thing to
confusing.
Listen to, isn't it?
Confusing.
Yeah, confusing. It's going to be a lot of people cheering for Powell, I think, if things definitely go sour.
It's like a kid, isn't it, who has like, you know, he has a stepdad and a dad. Doesn't see his dad too much, but his stepdad's in his life a bit. And then sort of Christmas Day, you know, oh, do we go to my dad's? Do we go to my stepdad's? It's all, you know what I mean? It's a bit sort of, it's all a bit confusing, isn't it, in the relationship with Powell and Price now. It's sort of a, it's messy. Yeah. It's messy.
That was a tough analogy to use, really, wasn't it? I think Powell's got more of a point to prove. Well, they both have, but I think Powell's like, you know, look, I'm coming in here and this is where I'm coming to work, so I need to show them how good I am and do one on them.
Yeah. So he'll be sort of. So you're going for a Castleford win, Dennis?
Yes.
Okay.
What about you, Rob?
Fuck, do I really have to give a prediction? Because I'm just at a loss now.
I know you want Castleford to win.
I'm just absolutely deflated. Who's going
to
win?
How much do you want
one?
Castleford to win by?
Look, if it starts going tits up, I'm more than happy for Castleford to win by 30, just so we can promote that Qantas flight in August. But no, I think we might bounce back. I think we might just come good on this one. So I'll go Warrington by 10, I think, for this one.
A lot of banging coming from you there.
It's the little lad, he's finished his Latin, he's just playing with his Lego.
Okay, you've released him.
Okay, that's it. We'll be back here same time next week, downloadable on dozens of different platforms. So with Wire set to take on the Tigers, as our very own A.A. Milne Sankey would say, the wonderful thing about Tiggers are Tiggers are wonderful things. It's a bouncy, bouncy bye-bye from Sam.
All the best.
And there's no letting up in the serialness of these jokes. It's a Frosty's, though great, from Dennis.
Bisigno.
I'm Rob Exotic, and it's a Tiger Toby King wave from me. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Which massage parlour do you want the number for?
Either's fine with me, Dennis. What time do they open?